frankly, we are scrambling at this point to preserve a ship that was enormously important to Alaska's maritime history.
An historic Coast Guard cutter goes on the auction block. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, June 17th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, it was a day of record-setting heat in many communities across Alaska, except for Anchorage.
Record or near-record temperatures are being experienced across most of northern Alaska.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
It's been more than 6 months since the mass shooting at an elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut, reignited the national debate on gun ownership. And with the anniversary came word that Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid will again try and pass a bill requiring universal background checks for gun sales. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, the vote will be laced with politics, and Reid will not be able to bank on the support of Senator Mark Begich.
On April 17th, the Senate rejected an amendment expanding background checks to gun shows and online sales. A majority, 54 senators, voted for the expanded law, but Senate rules require 60 votes. Both Begich and Senator Lisa Murkowski voted against the measure. A recent Gallup poll shows 83% of Americans support expanded background checks, a slight tick down from 91% just a few months ago. Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Democrat, says 6 months after the shooting, the families of victims remain undeterred.
The momentum is undiminished. The passion is stronger, if anything. We lost the first vote, but we're going to win the last vote. And the one who wins the last vote is the one who wins.
He compares the 2 days, the shooting and the vote.
December 14th was a day of searing sadness. But April 17th was a day of shame.
And that's why Reid says he'll bring up the measure again. He promises he will not accept a watered-down bill, but does not explain what that means. And it remains unclear whether the Senate will vote on other measures, like an amendment Begich promotes outlawing the seriously mentally ill from owning guns. Reid says it's not if the Senate passes the background check bill, it's when the Senate passes the background check bill.
The writing is on the wall. The Republicans who voted against this, the writing is on the wall. And the Democrats have voted against this, the handful of them that voted against this.
That handful includes Begich, Max Baucus, who is retiring, Mark Pryor, and Heidi Heitkamp. Pryor, like Begich, is up for re-election in 2014 in a Republican state.
Benjamin Wheeler, age 6.
At a Capitol Allison Hill press Wyatt, conference last week marking six. The anniversary,
Josephine
Matt
Knight,
Soto
age
read
seven.
The names and Jason ages Kowalski, of the victims who were murdered seven. At Sandy Hook. He paused to
Gracie
compose
McDonald,
himself when he got to his
seven.
Older sister.
Victoria Soto, age 27. Rachel DeVino, age 29.
The families
Lauren
of the
Lisa,
victims have returned to Capitol 30. Hill to lobby for the background checks. Begich met with them last week and again told them he would vote no. If the families cannot win over hesitant senators, one person hopes to punish them at the polls, New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Bloomberg, the billionaire who's been a Democrat, Republican, and now independent, is asking New York donors to withhold donations to Begich and the other no votes. One of those New Yorkers is Peter J. Solomon. The investment banker gave $2,500 to Senator Begich in the first quarter of this year. He's given him nearly $5,000 since 2008. He refused to comment for this story, but his aide gave a statement on his behalf. It says he respects both Mayor Bloomberg and Senator Begich, that he disagrees with Begich on gun control, but will continue to donate to him because he prefers a Senate in the Democrats' control. Begich says many of his donors don't agree with his vote on background checks.
You know, at their request, they would call, or I've made calls to say, hey, I know you have a concern or a question I want to answer, because I'm not afraid to talk to folks about my position and my votes.
It's unclear when the debate will begin again on the Senate floor. Reid says this time he will not bring it up for a vote until he knows he has the votes to pass it. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
The historic Coast Guard cutter Storrs, which spent most of its post-World War II career sailing Alaska waters, is on the auction block. KMXT's Jay Barrett reports.
Alaska's congressional delegation had managed to stave off disposal since its 2007 decommissioning, but the federal government has decided it's time to move on. Heather Handyside is a press secretary for Senator Mark Begich.
It does take a little bit of money to maintain these older historical vessels, and so unfortunately we weren't able to keep it, and it's being auctioned off.
The Storrs was listed last week on the auction side of the General Services Administration. The opening bid, which did not meet the reserve price, was $60,000. Joe Geldhoff, the secretary for the Storrs Museum in Juneau, said it appeared the GSA was not willing to wait any longer for Congress to give away the ship.
Well, a number of us around the country and throughout Alaska were surprised with the General Services Administration's acts in putting it up for auction. We were on a track for the Congress to dispose of the Storrs by giving it to the museum. And we were frustrated, as many people are in dealing with Congress, by various maneuvering and stuff. But, you know, this caught a lot of people by surprise, the GSA play.
Geldof said the Storrs Museum Group was hoping to bring the ship back to Juneau, where it was stationed in the 1940s and 50s, and use it for training young mariners as well as a museum.
What we had hoped when we heard about this not too long ago, that we would be able to obtain the vessel for training purposes through the Sea Cadets program run by the Navy League of the United States. And the General Services Administration wasn't willing to work with us, and they just wanted to put it out to bid. And, you know, there's conflicting views, apparently, within the General Services Administration, whether it's in California or Atlanta, where this seems to be being run from. But, you know, if I sound confused, it's because all of us are a little bit.
Geldof says the next move will hopefully save the Storrs from the scrapyard, but it might mean the ship won't be retired in Alaska.
Frankly, we are scrambling at this point to preserve a ship that was enormously important to Alaska's maritime history and to the maritime history of the United States.
The Storrs spent about 10 years stationed in Juneau and another 50 in Kodiak. It spent much of its time patrolling the North Pacific and the Bering Sea. In Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.
Governor Sean Parnell has requested a federal disaster declaration for Galena and other communities damaged by spring flooding. Most of the State of Alaska Emergency Management Team that's been in Galena to assist with flood relief is scheduled to leave this week. The team has been in the city since shortly after the May 27th incident to assist in coordinating rebuilding efforts. KIYU's Jeremy Scott has more.
The imminent departure means the city and Loudoun Tribal Council must pick up the slack in playing the incident command role. Public Information Officer Terry Solomon says one of the keys to a successful transitional period is making sure specific jobs are filled. She says the city may look into bringing in someone to fill the PIO post once she leaves, as well as someone to fill the role of logistics chief.
And the other thing that we've thought about is emergency services, the ambulance. They got to put a fire out at the water plant. They're also firefighters. So we know that the emergency responders that are here in town that respond in a normal situation are busy. And so that might be something that you'd want to continue on during the summer for a time period so that if there is someone hurt working on their homes or doing, you know, the construction work, that we could take care of that in a timely manner so you don't have to be thinking about that.
Solomon is scheduled to stay through the 25th, while most of the rest of the team leaves this Wednesday or Thursday. Reporting from Galena, I'm Jeremy Scott.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the community of Adak faces an uncertain future.
That's all it's been is fishing, fishing, fishing. You can't rely on anything else, you know. Without fishing, this town's gonna die.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Those living with asthma know that each day their life can take several different routes. So take care of yourself with daily medication and you'll be well rested and eager to take on the day. Miss taking your medication and you'll end up with restless sleep, days at home sick, or even in the emergency room. So treat your asthma even when you're feeling your best to keep you from your worst. Information at asthmainalaska.org or 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association.
New record high temperatures are being recorded in many places around the state today, with Talkeetna topping the charts at 94 degrees. It's their second straight day of record high heat. Seward also hit its all-time high temperature today with thermometers reaching 88 degrees, and the Prince William Sound communities of Valdez and Cordova set new record highs, both reaching 90. In southeast Alaska, Yakutat reached a new high of 74, topping a state a record set back in 1967. Temperatures haven't quite reached their peak for the day in the interior and northern portions of the state, but according to Christopher Cox with the National Weather Service in Fairbanks, it's going to be hot.
Record or near record temperatures are being experienced across most of northern Alaska. We're expecting high temperatures today in the mid to upper 80s, even pushing low 90s across much of the central interior.
Temperatures across the state are expected to cool off slightly around the state later this week, but will remain higher than normal forecast this time of year. Quick action by firefighters is credited with keeping a wildfire away from homes and cabins near Harding Lake, south of Fairbanks. The fire is one of a few getting attention as hot, dry weather amps up wildfire season in the interior. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Airdrops and ground crews successfully battled back the flames on the Old Valdez Trail fire Sunday. State Division of Forestry spokeswoman Maggie Rogers says the human-caused blaze is southwest of the Richardson Highway, about a mile from Harding Lake.
Fairly populated area, not only people who live in that area, but also people who recreate in that area. It was a large response yesterday. It was burning in very close proximity to structures, even burned up within 10 feet from structures. So we had to work on protecting them, of which we were successful in that. And now crews are working to contain the fire, and that should be a several-day effort as they're working in steeper country and have quite a few snags to deal with.
The exact cause of the Old Valdez Trail fire is under investigation. Rogers says it's burned about 20 acres in mixed forests, but the extremely hot, dry conditions are allowing even typically less volatile fuels like hardwoods and green grass to be readily consumed.
The big concern is human-caused fires because we're already short on aviation and other resources. We're moving crews around the state, and we have the predictions for lightning are more towards the end of the week and potentially dry lightning. And so the prevention of human-caused fires will save those resources for us to respond to lightning-caused fires.
The Bureau of Land Management is working a fire near the Yukon Flats village of Venati. BLM Alaska Fire Service spokesman Mel Slater says the North Fork Chandelier fire grew from 5 to 48 acres before suppression efforts slowed it down.
We put the smoke jumpers on it. We dropped retardant and water on the fire. And we also added a Fort Yukon EFF crew. So it kind of looks like the fire is getting to be a little bit more stable.
The largest wildfire getting attention in the state is in southwest Alaska. The Lime Hills fire has burned 21,000 acres north of Lime Village. 55 people are working the blaze. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
It's been a rocky 12 years since ADAC was incorporated as a city. The community has survived power crisis, crushing debt, and twice the closure of its biggest business, the fish processing plant. But now ADAC is facing a new, larger setback. Tomorrow, the processing plant's equipment is being auctioned off. And as KUCB's Stephanie Joyce reports, if it leaves the island, ADAC will be left without its economic engine.
It's dark inside the plant, and our footfalls echo off the dormant processing lines as Richard Lewis, Icicle Seafood's last remaining employee in ADAC, shows me around.
So this is all automated size graders over here against the wall. Let me turn on another section of lights.
How many people were working here during peak seasons?
A couple hundred.
What's the most fish that this facility can process in a given day?
I think it's close to a million a day.
The plant hasn't processed anything since April, and on each piece of equipment, there's a green tag announcing an auction lot number. The equipment is owned by Rhode Island-based Independence Bank and will be bid as a turnkey operation first, then piecemeal. Whichever attracts a better price will win. For Imelda Clary, the outcome will decide whether she stays in ADAC or not. She used to work at the processing plant and stayed on after Icicle left.
I like it here. I like the people. We just don't know how we're gonna do it, but we're gonna try.
For Clary, trying means working as a cook and waitress at the Cold Rock Cafe, which is where I catch up with her. But without a plant, Clary's not sure how long she'll have a job.
If the plant gets pieced out, well, what's going to happen to you?
I hope not. I hope they do something to keep it here. So to help the community here in ADAC, there's a lot of people depending for that base plant here.
Cafe owner George Lopez agrees. He says it's hard to imagine a future for the community without a processing plant.
This town's is fishing. I've been here, like I said, I've been here since 2007, and that's all it's been, is fishing, fishing, fishing. You can't rely on anything else, you know. You know, we have contractors coming in and out, but without fishing, this town's going to die.
Lopez owns or co-owns three businesses in ADAC. He says so far, the plant's closure hasn't actually had much of an impact on his revenues, because there are tourists and Navy contractors doing cleanup work this summer. But he's sure that in the long run, not having a fish plant would take its toll.
I've seen the decline in this town. I've seen it go from about 300 people, 200 people. We may have 80 to 120 people here now. So it's been a slow decline over the last 6 years, you know, and it's been because two of those years we didn't have no fish plant.
Rhonda Kelly is a former Icicle employee and one of the people who's planning to leave if the plant doesn't reopen. She owns a house in ADAC and wants to stay, but only if there's work.
Man, hopefully that dream comes true. And I'm in that fish plant telling them where this go, that go, and how this work and how that works, and watch out for that leak up there. And that's what I'm hoping.
If the plant gets pieced out, though, Kelly plans to move back to the East Coast, where she's from. Still, she says it would be difficult to cut all ties with ADAC, and she plans to keep her house as a vacation home if she has to leave. Others say they'll stick around no matter what. Elaine Smiloff is the harbor master, and she's had to go part-time since the plant closed.
It's tough being a harbor master without boats.
But Smiloff doesn't think the auction will be the end of the community. She's lived in ADAC since 2004 and has seen the town come back from the brink of disaster more than once. As she sees it, the naysayers have been wrong before.
I don't think there's going to be any mass exodus from ADAC. When they tried that before, when they were having the power problems, they were saying, the city manager was saying, well, you know, everybody needs to, we need to evacuate ADAC. I think that's when they found out that, no.
He was the only one that left.
Yeah, he was the only one that left.
The current city manager has no plans to leave. Leighton Lockett agrees with Smiloff that this isn't the worst the community has seen. He says when ADAC Fisheries went bankrupt in 2006, that was much worse.
We're in a much better position to say, okay, let's sit down, let's talk, because we're not suing each other, or we're not all in bankruptcy together.
The plant's closure has resulted in some belt tightening. Lockett gutted the city's capital budget this year to make up for lost revenues, but he says the operating budget is steady, and the city has about $1 million in reserves. So for now, city employees will keep their jobs, and the lights will stay on. The auction will take place Tuesday at 10 a.m. in Anchorage. Reporting in ADAC, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Complete a bachelor program without leaving home. Whether a first-time or transfer student, the University of Alaska Southeast has the degree for you. Visit ketch.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
The Obama administration's top officials dealing with Arctic issues were in Anchorage Friday looking for comments from Alaskans about their new Arctic policy. They got plenty of them from a standing room only crowd. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
There were executives from an impressive alphabet soup of agencies: the Office of Science and Technology Policy, the National Security Council, the Council on Environmental Quality, the State, Commerce, and Interior Departments, and the Environmental Protection Agency, not to mention District 17 Coast Guard Admiral Thomas Ostebo, who's seen a lot of the Arctic in his 2 years of command, and started off with this observation.
This is a today event. As we think a lot about the future is today.
Events are overrunning policy. Ostebo says this year's weak sea ice has allowed non-ice-strengthened vessels into the Arctic Ocean 2 weeks earlier than usual. But others say the ice has piled up so badly at Point Barrow that as of Friday, whaling crews hadn't landed any bowheads and Nolukatuk was canceled. Some of the federal executives had originally planned to be in Barrow for a meeting in the state's Arctic Policy Commission, but they weren't able to schedule a flight in. Commission Chair Senator Liesl McGuire and Representative Bob Herron did make it back to Anchorage to address them in person. The commission has not even written its own letter of introduction to the feds yet, but Herron summed up their basic point.
We want to increase our voice in a high-level decision regarding America's Arctic.
Herron, the lieutenant governor, and both of Alaska's senators kicked off about 2 hours of comments on the Arctic policy itself, abruptly announced by the administration just last month. The Alaska Intertribal Council and several other indigenous organizations talked about the need for consultation. They're concerned about food security in a changing Arctic, and they want more than just lip service to traditional knowledge. This is Art Ivanov of the Bering Sea Alliance.
The fact that change is coming in our neck of the woods, and there's a need to be a part of that process, to be a part of the solution.
He wants involvement in the reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Act governing federal fisheries. Kathy Sullivan, a former astronaut, now acting head of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, indicated she got the message.
So we will put ourselves on the hook to drive our colleagues and our agencies to do a better job in that regard as we move forward.
Oil spill preparedness came up repeatedly, along with the Law of the Sea Treaty, still unratified by the U.S. Senate. The Obama administration has put more energy into Arctic affairs than the Bush administration, but Kevin Herron, who represents the organization Pacific Environment in the International Maritime Organization, says the U.S. has yet to establish much of a voice in negotiating international pollution prevention agreements.
Right now, I think the U.S. delegation, the perception of most of the NGOs that go there is that it's been extremely weak.
But government also has plenty of internal challenges for dealing with the changing Arctic and badly needs to integrate a patchwork of agency jurisdictions, according to a report authored by a group of senior administration officials chaired by outgoing Deputy Interior Secretary David Hayes. That report, out earlier this year, formed the basis for the Arctic policy, and Friday Hayes told Alaskans they should take an active role in seeing it fleshed out.
I want to thank all of you for your input today. I do think this process is extremely important, and we hope that you continue to provide input.
According to another of the report's authors, Brendan Kelly, of the Office of Science and Technology Policy, that fleshing out is due to be complete this coming fall. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
The state and U.S. government are partnering together to investigate building a deep port at Nome or Port Clarence. They're in the early stages of the study. Officials from the Alaska Department of Transportation and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers visited Nome, Brevik Mission, and Teller last week to collect public input about marine infrastructure and to hear about local concerns over natural resource impacts. The Corps took comments for an environmental impact statement on the Arctic Deep Draft Ports Navigation Improvements Feasibility Study. The meetings mark the beginning of a long process until proposals for port projects are fleshed out. In Teller, residents asked about impacts to the fragile Arctic environment and the hunting and fishing that so many in the area depend on. Lifelong resident Josie Garney says she's worried about increased vessel traffic and who will regulate and be responsible for cleanup of spills and other pollution.
It's just the most beautiful place in the world, and it's really sensitive. It's vulnerable, the environment. So like if one thing gets impacted, it's going to impact everything else. It's going to impact the people. And we live off of the land here.
Her father, Joe Garney, known for his long career as an Iditarod musher, says he's worried about vessel impacts to seal pups.
At this time of the year, literally thousands of seals come into this bay for calving. They give birth on the ice. They're here for a few days and then they're gone, but they need that short period of time while the ice is really thin. And if that ice is broken up, I don't know what that'll do to them if there's a lot of boats in here.
Teller and Brevik Mission are located near a natural deep water bay, and ships have always sought shelter from bad weather or ice at Port Clarence. Garney says the vessels are coming whether locals want them or not. And he says economic development is needed because there are very few employment opportunities for locals.
The only thing here is a little grocery store, employs a few at minimum wage pretty much, and the school. The school employs a few. And the clinic, and that's it. There's no real economic base here.
Lorraine Cordova is an economist with the Army Corps of Engineers and the Deepport Project Manager. She says she learned a lot from the dozens of people who came to the three community meetings.
Vessels who are selling oil in this region are parking very large vessels here in Port Clarence and then lightering onto other smaller vessels. They can avoid taxes, and they can also, you know, ship lots of oil in very big ships that can't be accommodated by other ports here. There is a lot of interest in jobs and how this is going to, how a project out here could benefit the communities. And I think we heard that pretty loud and clear from all of the communities that not only do they want protection of the environment that they live in, but they also want some economic opportunities.
Deep draft port construction could start in 2017. State and federal government officials say with increased vessel traffic, there is a need for ramping up the Coast Guard's presence for safety and national sovereignty. The Corps will hold more public meetings in December. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Jeremy Scott in Galena, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, and Deanna Hecker in Nome. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of Native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at thealaskanannookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources. As an active senior, your independence is important to you. One of the ways for you to maintain your independence is to reduce your risk of falling. A fall risk assessment can be part of your initial or annual Medicare exam. They'll ask about your vision and review your medications for possible problems. Learn ways to improve balance, strengthen muscles, and reduce hazards at home. Contact your Medicare provider for an appointment. This message in good health is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.